Across the Park podcast is proud to be sponsored by Globe Gas and Heating. For the best kitchen and bathroom renovations, boiler servicing and repair, and central and underfloor heating in the Northwest, head over to globecentralheating.com and quote Across the Park for a free quote.
Hello everyone, welcome back to the Across the Park podcast. It's great to be back in the studio. Wouldn't say it's great to be talking about Everton again, but it's certainly great to be back in the studio. Massive thanks, as always, to the Pod Cafe, who provide us with this terrific studio. And also a bit of a plug for those guys. If you are looking to try and record your own podcast, do some of your own PR, again, couldn't think of a better place to do it than in here. And also, they're happy to come out to your workplace if that helps as well. So give Pod Cafe a follow. You can either search for them, Pod Cafe Podcast Liverpool on Google, or just find them by clicking the link in our bio. So yeah, again, it's another week of Everton. Plenty of ups and downs, mostly downs. But just on that note, before we get into it, Millsy bumped into someone in town the other day. So he's asked me to pass on a message to the gentleman who met Millsy. And it was a message to Leighton and Caden. Again, I don't know if you watched the show, Leighton and Caden. They are young blues, apparently, and they're feeling it a little bit at the moment, feeling really down over the results and everything that's going on. All I can say is, listen, it's part and parcel of being an Evertonian, but the best part about being an Evertonian is we don't sulk when we get beat. You know, we bounce back, we'll come back in the game the next week, big smile on our face, get behind the team. Not everyone, but most Evertonians. But lads, keep your heads up. Honestly, I'm sure there'll be brighter times ahead for you, particularly if you're young. Can't say the same for me and Colin, but yeah, keep your heads up, lads. Again, hopefully that helps. I'm not sure if it will. If you don't want too much negativity, just turn off now and come back next week. No, only messing, lads. Just keep a smile on your face and keep supporting the Blues. A little bit of housekeeping before we start, a little bit more housekeeping. Big thank you to Globe Heating and Gas, our long-term sponsors. Lee, the owner of Globe, is a massive supporter of the podcast, but also Big Blue as well. So if you do need your bathroom doing, or again, need your boiler sorting out, you need underfloor heating, whatever it is, give them a shout. And Tick Property Group, thanks for their support. They've got an advert coming up later in the show. So without further ado, Colin, thanks a lot for coming in again, mate.
No problem. Yeah, enjoy it.
Well, you don't have to lie. I always say it's a bit like therapy. You get out of the studio and you go, got everything off our plates. But yeah, thanks again for coming in and deputising for Millsy. Millsy sends his apologies, but believe me, he's here in spirit. The reason I've got my phone here is because Millsy just doesn't stop messaging me while the show is good. Don't forget to do this. Don't forget to do that. So I'll try my best to live up to Millsy's high standards as a host. So we're going to go through a little bit of an order. We're going to start with the humbling defeat at Chelsea, first of all, Colin. We'll go through that. We have got some social media questions, as always, so we'll tackle them as they come up. I'm going to ask you a few questions about, the further rumblings and I guess, publications that have come out in relation to the takeover, the debt, the potential administration. Unfortunately, we'll have to go through that. And we will look ahead to the fixtures. You've already got one wrong, Col, so we've got one less point than what you thought already, yeah. But hopefully we can get that back. But look, let's start with the Monday night. I mean, I don't know about yourself. I was looking at it. I mean, we spoke about it last week briefly. I was looking at it as a bit of a free hit. You know, they're unpredictable, or they have been unpredictable, Chelsea, this season. Certainly a team that could be got at. I mean, a week ago, I was thinking to myself, just go there, be hard to beat, frustrate them, etc. I haven't seen the results of the weekend. I kind of changed my attitude and thought, you know what, go for it. Go and try and get 3 points there, because if we do, it almost like, you know, takes us well out of there. Before we go into the game itself, what was your attitude, I guess, when we got to Monday? What were you hoping to see in terms of the way they approached the game?
I honestly thought we could have got a result there. And I think, you know, when we miss the first big chance, it tells you a lot about who we are then as a team. And the Beto miss for me was a bit of a domino effect for the rest of the game. The worrying thing for me about that game, it reminded me of the Villa game at the start of the season, way we just collapsed.
Completely.
And it was the lack of a plan. Or I honestly believe before that, you know, obviously, you know, if you look at our chances to goals ratio, it's alarming, but we were still creating them. and we were still fairly solid-ish. But the other night on Monday, I just didn't see that. That bit of resilience in the team. You know, for getting a result. Because I would have been fairly happy with a draw. In fact, I would have been really happy. It's points away from home, but the game plan just didn't change for me. It was a similar sort of feeling to the Burnley game. I thought you're going 1-0 down in probably dice fashion, close up. You know, but yet we still had like 4 or 5 players in there after while they were building from the back and getting caught every time. So it was just a very, very familiar feeling to like when we played Villa early doors in the season. Really easy to entice in and break down. And it was worrying.
And I remember actually thinking back to that game, I remember the comments from Dyche after the game, and he was suggesting that the players had kind of lost, you know, hadn't followed the plan, or, you know, lost the discipline, etc. He made the same comments the other night. Now, early on in the season, I think when you're trying to get the players into a certain way of playing and stuff, I don't think them comments are the most harmful. When you get to the business end and you're just looking to get over the line and you need the backing of the players, I wasn't sure that was the best way to go about it.
No, I agree with you. And I also agree with a few people who were sitting with in the match about the style of play he might be looking to get just isn't out of the tune of the players he's got. I mean, you're going to touch on like players in a minute. I mean, Ashley Young, you know, playing in that position where he was the other night, you know, the amount of times he was outrun.
Getting hung out to dry, isn't he? Let's be honest.
Absolutely,
I feel sorry for him.
Yeah, but then I look at the other people who were on the bench, you know, the Godfreys and the, you know, Patterson. Surely these must be Patterson and Godfrey in the manager's mindset before Ashley Young. He's obviously gone with him for a reason. I've give up second guessing him. I honestly thought he had a way of playing against teams like Chelsea. You want to be a bit more expansive, but he played right into their hands. Just as, for me, like I said, familiarity with the Villa game. He's done exactly the same. But it was that inability, like with the Burnley game, change it. Change it. You know, it looked like we were just throwing it into the wind and it was coming back right at us. And it lacked me a plan.
I know, and I think it, at this level, I know it's easy to say change and he makes 3 changes at half time, but you could see from that first goal, we've been carved open.
Yeah.
Carved open completely. And as you say, you could see just from the naked eye, we had too many players in certain areas, not enough players in other areas. That's not something you can't address in game. You know, drop another player in, you know, push him in here, pull him in. You know what I mean? It's not, he looked a bit dumbfounded and desperate, and the players were kind of looking at each other. You know, I don't think that was a team on Monday that was lacking leaders. You know, there was players in there, I would say, like Tarkowski, Coleman, Pickford, seen all that before. You're not telling me that after 10, 15 minutes, some of them wouldn't have went, let's pull him in here, let's pull... None of that was going on, and that's alarming for me, because I think if your manager obviously sends you out with a game plan... There's 2 things, obviously, that can happen. Your manager sends you out with a game plan. The game plan isn't working. Your leaders kind of rally around. That happens at every level of footy, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's not working, this. Let's do this. Let's get through the half time. Now, whether that happened in-game and it backfired, I don't know. But either way, it's concerning, isn't it, to see that type of divide, if you like.
It's like what the point you're raising there is, like, you adapt, don't you, on the pitch?
Yeah,
you know what I mean? You adapt sometimes, and players see a difference, you know what I mean? And that for me, shows good leadership. You know?
Yeah.
The spotting things in there where there's overloads or...
Now
you're getting pulled from. Go on.
I'm deliberately asking you that because I'm honing in on Dyche's comments here. So bear with me. This is not a dig at Dyche. I'm just trying to read into why he thinks it went wrong and what maybe the ripples or the knock-on effect might be. If I said to you before half time, right, you know, he's not happy with the attitudes of the players. Who's he going to take off? The last person on my list would have been Seamus Coleman. Now, going back to my previous point, and this is a bit of a, maybe I'm going down a rabbit hole here. If you're looking at players on that pitch, you maybe would have made comments or suggestions to other players to change the way we were playing. One of those players might have been Seamus Coleman. Dyche comes out and says they weren't following the game plan. He wasn't happy, blah, 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 and he rags Coleman off at half-time. Do you think it was Coleman who maybe suggested to certain players that we do something different, and that's...
I mean, we can only speculate that.
Mm.
I'll be honest, but for me,
I
would definitely have brought Young off before him.
Yeah,
100%. You know what I mean? And I'd Patterson in front of him.
Yeah.
Maybe to just, you know, support.
You just double up, yeah.
I just think he got the shape wrong. And I think that's his inability for me. And I've praised him the last few weeks for having, you know, a basic plan with that group of players. But you know, going three centre-backs and packing the midfield out and just counter-attack where we could is where most teams have had success against Chelsea because they've had to come out and play.
Yeah.
But we got pulled right into their half, middle third, nearly 80% of the game, and just got picked off. So I think in answer to that question, you know, has he been a bit of a scapegoat maybe, you know, for a decision? You know,
it's the wrong person to scapegoat though, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think obviously when the Brantwaite decision came, he's thinking, right, Forrest, the game's gone. He's already thinking, or is he thinking that with Coleman as well? Like, get him off, this game's gone, you know?
Maybe.
For me, to the detriment of like the rest of the game, guys, we've conceded like another 3 or 4 goals. So if you're talking about confidence,
the goal difference is shot now, like with the same goal difference as Forest now, which was one of our biggest. That was like an extra point at this stage of the season. It was an extra point because, you know, you finish level and you're finishing above
that. That's what surprised me the most of them, you know, in the last couple of games. I understand he can't he doesn't feel that he can coach them to come out and play against teams, but he can certainly shut shop because that's what he's good at. But I'm like you there. I'm thinking like the warning signs there are similar to what they were at Villa early doors. But it took them 4 or 5 games then to get it right.
Yeah.
But we haven't got 4 or 5 games to get it right. We've got to get it right now. And I think he's probably left with more questions now about who's my starting 11 than what he was, you know, maybe 2 or 3 weeks before that. But the conceding bit for me, we look really easy to score against now.
Do you know what that reminded me of? Most the Chelsea game was the end of the Lampard era, where it looked like the players were like,
Gibble.
F this.
Yeah.
I'm not running for him anymore. I'm not doing this for him. And when you come out and make comments like that after the game, that doesn't endear yourself to the players anymore. Now, I'd like to think there's a fraction of enough players in that dressing room now who think we're going to do it for the fans, not for him. But if they weren't going to do it the other night, why would they do it in the next few games? Now, it's different to Goodison. We're going to talk about that later on. The dynamic is slightly different, but I think there was a lot of food for thought coming out of that game.
Definitely, yeah. And again, all the stuff we probably associate with Dyche, you know, of how he sets teams up, it just lacked, like, plan, you know, defensive, you know, setup and again, confidence in that. You know, and for me, it was completely polar opposite to what I was expecting, I thought they just played into Chelsea's hands, and they didn't look like to me like they had enough confidence in his plan, if there was a plan there. And seemed to me it was quite fractional, you know, the way the players were.
Well, there was certain groups of players that were going pressing the ball, and then there was a gap of like 40 yards to the rest of the team going, now, I don't fancy that. It was disjointed in every way, and that's the very opposite of what we need in the next few weeks.
But it puzzles me that, because what was you doing the week before?
Yeah,
because I'm sure you've set up for that
long break.
I'm sure you've set up for that. You got a long weekend to, you know, go into more routines of like out of possession and how you're going to play against Chelsea. And it just looked to me like they hadn't done anything.
And none of that makes sense, does it? Because let's say, for instance, there was a notion or a conversation that had taken place behind closed doors where the players, the managing team, went, look, for some reason, let's not put everything into this game because it's not what we don't want is suspensions, injuries. But if you're going to do that, you'd field a different team. You'd maybe put the likes of Lewis Warrington, Shamiti out there, which we'll talk about in a moment. But then there was ill discipline in there. There was fouling. There was daft tackles going in. We've got an injury, obviously, in Jared Brantwaite. We've gained nothing from that game. Like the opposite, as you say, we've lost confidence. It's such a negative result and a negative performance at this stage of the season.
Yeah. Personally, I think in hindsight, if you look back on it now, if he's got a healthy squad with everyone on board, would he have done it differently? I think he 100%. Mm. Yeah, 100% he would. But like I say, I mean, it just didn't look good the other night watching it. And, you know, does it fill you with any confidence for the fixtures coming up? No. And I think it's Groundhog Day, isn't it? It's back to us as fans to motivate them to get a performance when, you know, at that level, motivation's one element of it, guys. But, you know, you can't be waiting till this end of the season for us to tell you to
kick you up
the backside.
And again, there's been a bit of stick that the 1878 have got this week for, you know, rolling out all the banners and flags and all that, and you know, from some sections of the fans and some, you know, Everton Page is basically saying, F off, I'm sick of doing this. I'm sick of us getting called upon. And as much as I feel sorry for the 1878, because it's not their fault, they're just trying to do their part and whatever, and they've been probably the most consistent group of people at the club for quite some time. But I get it. I get the feeling of like, oh God, not this again. Do you know what I mean? Why are we having to drag these back up again after another poor show?
I know you're going to come to it shortly. You know, I honestly do feel now it's at a critical point where what's happening off the field is affecting the players and the squad and the manager. Mm. And that's why we are where we are again. You know, and until that's got more clarity and we all understand as fans and it's being communicated properly where we're going next, you know, from an ownership point of view, then I think it'll have a knock-on effect on the players. Because I certainly think, you know, he's probably done as well a job as I think he can have done to keep them on board, on side. But how much is that wearing on the players? You know, knowing what points you've got to get, you know, where you're going to be next season.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, what situation are you in? And mentally, you know, it might have just hit a bit of a point now with the squad where they've lost that little bit of focus.
Mm. Well, we'll come back to that in a moment. So I just want to touch on a few questions or points you've had on social media. Wayne Ellis, I think it's Wayne Ellis, says, what have Chimiti and Warrington got to do to get any minutes on the pitch? They can do no worse than what's already on there.
Yeah, I couldn't disagree with that at all. I mean, if Dobbs was fit again, he'd be the other one. I'd throw into the mix as well. But for whatever reason, you know, and I wouldn't mind him just coming out and publicly saying, look, this is the reason. Mm. You know, so we all know, you know what I mean? But I'm fed up as a fan being left in the dark and second guessing, because is he doing it? Could they do any worse than what's already there? Well, the only way to find out is just play them. Let's have a look.
It just felt like a perfect chance the other night. I think if both of them were to come on and maybe not played so well, he wouldn't have got any stick for that. It's been like, do you know what? I think most fans would have been, absolutely. I was right, great, give the lads a go. Do you know what I mean? The young players who spent a lot of time in the 23s and obviously in Lewis Warrington's case, spent a lot of time on loan. What you would have got from Lewis Warrington without doubt is endeavour and work rate and just a bit of heart, and that's exactly what that side needs on Monday. Kenny Peters, and I've just seen a really amusing tweet about this particular subject, which I'll read out in a minute. Kenny said, name me a worse striker in our recent history than Beto. His first touch almost takes him back to Italy. His finishing is terrible and he's never off the floor. Should have kept Sims. I mean, the last point is just proper Everton, isn't it? Like, Sims the leading goal scorer in the championship now, but Beto first and foremost.
I think we've mentioned this off air as well. It's just not working for him, is it?
No.
You know, and if you look at his chance per goal ratio, it's scary, you know, just how bad it is. Mm. That big chance he missed the other night, that could probably put us in front, and the game changes then completely. You know, puts Chelsea on the back foot. How many of them has he had in the last few games? And if you're flipping that to Schmitty, well, why not give someone else a go, you know what I mean? And Calvert-Lewin's no difference. He's had one that bounced off the keeper and a pen.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? But I don't know. For me, either we don't know how to play him, or, you know, I think that's the running part, you know, but from a finishing point of view, he's very poor.
Yeah.
Very poor.
I guess I'm thinking, because, look, the finishing thing without doubt, you know, I guess you can... If you're going to be generous, you can give him a little bit of leeway and say, look, he's come from Italy. It's a slower league. You know, that extra second that he maybe gets in Italy doesn't get in the Premier League, and that leads him to look rash. That's not me defending some of the misses. Some of the misses have been dreadful. But if he had really good build-up play and, you know, he held the ball up well and he'd give us a good option here and there, you'd be like, all right, fair enough. He's not really giving us that. Because that's the thing that actually we miss most when Calvert-Lewin doesn't play. Is the fact that he, you know, Calvert-Lewin will hold the ball up, he'll bring other players in, he wins most things in the air. He's quite short on that side as well.
Yeah.
So therefore, if Chimiti can't do either of those things, shouldn't he be in the squad?
Mm. Yeah, and I guess that's the one directional plan he's got. He can only play one way with the way he set them up. And I think I mentioned it the other week in the other show, was he looks different, Gomez, when Gomez is in there, Beto, because... He plays a different type of pass. It's not a direct pass into him.
Yeah, yeah.
He probably plays him a little bit more in behind along the floor. Yeah.
Good point.
And I don't think in the games I've watched the two of them play together enough.
Mm,
do you know what I mean? To suit the forward, but...
Yeah, because Decore, like, what you get from Decore as a forward is just someone running off you, isn't it? Someone chasing things down and getting close to you and stuff, which helps when the ball's bouncing off him, I guess. But there's just not that real. You need a bit of chemistry to play with Decore, don't you? You need
definitely,
to kind of.
Yeah.
And Calvert-Lewin has that, I think, because he's played with him long enough. I don't think whether it's Beto's intelligence or whether it's the fact that the two different, they've got that. You're right, I think Gomez in there, Gomez is always a pass ahead,
mm-hmm.
and he always knows the movements of the next player. That's the one thing he's got. Yeah. And I think if Beto is someone who runs off the shoulder, you're right. I think that's probably.
And I guess, you know, having that relationship, you know, with certain players to help him, you know, because there's some runs he's made, you know, when he's come on for Calvert-Lewin, and they're all off the shoulder. When it comes into him,
the ball just goes wide, then he's like,
it makes him look foolish. But I think once he gets into them attacking areas, there's a lot of times he's isolated.
Mm.
You know, and maybe I think he's got to look at maybe a better combination when he plays in with a certain midfielder as to what he does with Calvert-Lewin. But I don't think he wants to take Decore off because of his physicality and his height. And
yeah, I mean, he was so lucky to stay on the pitch the other night. And it was only the fact that there were other players. And I think, again, this is why I'm really troubled by the comments. I think one of the reasons he stays on is, you know, I imagine Decore to be the type of person who will just run through a brick wall, whether he thinks it's the right thing to do or not. He'll just do it, won't he?
And I don't do. But guys, you need more than that.
No, you do. Yeah. And I'm thinking about the why Deitch would prefer a certain player. I think he knows it's Decore. No answering back. If you tell him to do something, he does it. You know, and whether it's right or wrong for the team, I don't think he thinks like that. I think he just does it. And the other night, it called for a little bit more cleverness, didn't it? Intelligence to go, okay, well, maybe I should just drop in here for the next 10 minutes while Cole Palmer's just completely demoralising our two defensive midfielders. Mm-hmm. Let's go in and protect them. Didn't do that. He kept staying up near Beto, and it was just a big gaping hole, wasn't it? But we'll move past the better one. I think you're in a similar mind or of a similar mindset to Kenny Peters. But again, going back to the previous one, it begs belief how Chimiti has not had minutes. And I think just to draw a line under it, it's fair to say it's not going to happen. Mm. He's not going to be playing now, is he? Because we're going to talk later about someone else who might be coming back into the squad potentially. But I think if you're not playing him now and have faith to play him, there's bigger games coming up that I don't think you're going to.
Yeah.
And you know what? I think he would get even more criticism if he went and thrown him in for like a Sheffield United at home when he hasn't played him all season. It'd be what are you doing?
Yeah, but I think I said earlier on, I'm not second guessing him anymore.
No.
You know, I just think I am literally getting to the point now with the Forest on the weekend is literally when we get there, take it from there.
Yeah,
what squad he's decided to put out there.
Well, the last player who comes in for criticism, and this is on socials, there's a lot more to point to, but it's from Craig Mansfield on Twitter, or on X, sorry, who says, Amadou Onana should not be selected for Everton again. He isn't even trying. We should be ruthless. We need to be Brentford, Sheffield United and Luton. Play Guy, Dukes, this is his word, by the way, I don't call him Dukes, and Danjuma. What have you made of Onana? I don't see it.
I think, guys, we've covered him a lot. Mm. You know what I mean? He's still a young lad, you know, and for me, he's not round the right midfielders to get the best out of him. And I still personally don't know where he sits in that midfield. We play a three, you know.
Do you know what he is?
I honestly, I think he'd probably be, for me, better where Decore is.
Yeah.
Playing higher up, supporting the forwards. Than what he would be deeper because he slows the game down so much. Mm. And when we build through him, it's quite easy to win the ball off.
You know
what I mean? But I would agree with certain parts of that, but I feel that's a bit unfair because I'd rather have him in the team than Garnaghy because I think at the moment he's treading water at times.
Still a presence, isn't he, in there potentially? I know what Craig's getting at here, to be fair. He's a very frustrating player to watch, but I guess that's the trait of a lot of young players of that ilk, you know what I mean? You've got that physical presence, but are not able to initially kind of influence the game as much as they'd like to.
Yeah, because, I mean, I watched them against England a couple of weeks ago. He was a completely different player, but he's now better players,
you know what I mean?
But for me, play him a little bit higher. It's less risk, you know, in case you lose the ball. And
Fellaini, innit? We had the same thing with Fellaini when Fellaini first
fell behind me. Morgo said the same thing. Yeah. He said we should just play him in behind with Calvert-Lewin, and at least if he doesn't get the header, at least we've got him.
Fellaini eventually dropped back then and looked a better player because he adapted to the game and he's found what he was good at and stuff.
And we got different midfielders around him then, and then we found the shape a bit better. But I still personally, I think he's unsure of what that midfield three is week on, depending on how they perform. But I still don't think they're set right. So that's why I probably think he's a little bit unfair, but I understand his point. Do you know what I mean? It looks like he goes through the motions in games. He spits his dummy out. I mean, I'd like to see him when he's a bit of a pet eater, man. He's tackled. He has to wait for the physio to come on before and then he's up and he's about. That's where he's got to toughen up a little bit more for me, because it just sends a signal out to the rest of the team. Oh, he's down again. He's going off. That kicks a bit of anxiety off in the crowds, and as stupid as that sounds, that's the way we see it. I'd like to see him get up, bounce up a bit more if he's not really injured, and kind of get on with it. But he can pull a few teeth with it. Like, he is frustrating at times, but I still think, you know, he's young. He's got loads to develop. And I think if we play him a little bit higher up the pitch, we'd probably get more out of him.
Yeah, I agree. Speaking of pulling teeth, it can be like pulling teeth trying to sell your house. So just going to give you a brief word from our sponsor, Tick Property Group, to help you solve that problem.
Tick Property Group are your local Liverpool-based estate agents with over 300 five-star reviews on Trustpilot. By selling your home now for an unbeatable offer of £497, your home will be advertised across all major portals, including Rightmove and Zoopla. You will also receive professional photography, floor plans, and a bespoke stylish video tour of your home. So take the stress out of selling and let Tick Property Group be your personal estate agent. Book your free valuation today and quote Across the Park to receive a 10% fee discount.
Thanks again to Tick Property Group. And again, as Millsy said a few weeks ago, we've had quite a few messages from both Tick Property Group and some of our followers saying that they've been working together and stuff, and it's went really well for them. So please check them out. Again, they're the best on the market, cheapest on the market, and again, they've helped quite a few of our followers already sell their house, which is great news for everyone. Just to stick on the topic and to finish off on the Chelsea game and a few players, when you're reading through the list then of, you know, obviously we're speaking about Anana, we're speaking about Decore, we're speaking about Garner Guy, James Garner, Andre Gomez, a lot's been said from me included this season about the lack of options and depth he's got. That's one of the best groups of centre mids that we've had in a long, long time, by the way. And I'm not saying they're great, I'm saying we've had some poor, poor options in the middle of the park. If you think about the attributes combined that all of them have got and the differences in some of the players, like you compare Gomez to Anana, for example, you compare James Garner to Decore, they're all very different. Like, we've been crying out all season for plan B, for different stuff. You couldn't get a wider, you know, kind of difference in abilities, but certainly in attributes of those groups of midfielders. It's actually remarkable.
No, I agree with your diverse group, but I still believe he doesn't know how to play them properly. I just think the shape's wrong, you know. And by the way, I'm not throwing a shape forward to say what it should be. I just think at the minute he's persevered with a shape doesn't suit them.
But when you say shape as well, it's two things, isn't it? As you were alluding to then, it's a shape that complements the players, but it's also a shape. And this, an ideal shape, should allow you to be able to attack in numbers when you, you know, when you've got the ball, and obviously be organised when you lose the ball. And going back to the point you made, and it's quite an obvious one, I guess, is that Dyche's mentality will always be, okay, let's be solid, and then when we get the ball, let's see what happens. It's very much that, I think. It's let's create a shape, and let's create a shape that suits the players defending. When we get the ball, right, let's just see what happens.
Yeah, because you can see it in the way they play. The players just look out of ideas when they're isolated on their own.
Yeah.
And it becomes like a bit of a, well, let's just see who moves for me and I'll play it into them. Builds up play, you know, in the wide areas again. It terrifying to overlap or underlap, you know, and them runs, you know, which are so important for the player on the ball, as you know, guys, with footy. It's just that lack of, like, you know, does he want you to do that?
Well, there's no way he does, because I don't think I've seen a season where I've seen less underlaps and overlaps ever since I've been an Evertonian. And again, going back to the quality of the players, we've had some dreadful fullbacks.
But then the ball gets out to the winger, and I've counted them one half. It was the West Ham game. There was 9 opportunities to cross the ball in the second half, and he cut back. And it was like, well, isn't the idea to, if you're not going to overlap, get it out quick and then whip the ball in?
Well, I remember as well, quite early in Zaita's reign, the one thing I really enjoyed was every time it went wide, they'd try and cross it. Mm-hmm. At times, it was like, it weren't even on, but it was just thinking, we'll win a corner.
If we
hit it early enough, the fullback will block it, it'll go out for the corner. And it was really refreshing because you're getting loads of corners. You'd obviously get a lot more territorial advantage. You get an opportunity to put our big men in there. Now, we did get quite a few corners against Chelsea, but you know, you go back to it now, everyone's worked us out. You know, we're just going to put it on the keeper.
Yeah.
And we're just going to put all our big men around there. Mm. And if you've got a fairly dominant keeper, because even Burnley's on that with a poor keeper, just coming out and just punching it or getting it.
Even like a short corner, something with a bit of variety. But I think I mentioned in the last show as well, Hetaita's throw-ins. I think we must be the worst team in the league to have a plan. Lose the ball, have a plan with a throw-in.
Yeah.
And I think it's, for me, it's them like little basic things in moments. The game where you know, we just lack that basic plan, that understanding. But I'd like to see us get the ball in the box a little bit earlier, like you said before, with crosses, because it just creates, doesn't it, opportunity for us to score. But a bit of, you know, a bit of getting the other team on the back foot with early crosses, but we could mix it up a little bit, then drop back in. But it just seems to be one way, doesn't it, when you're watching them?
It's like, you know, we talk about Jamiti, who's not getting minutes. We talk about the fact that the fullbacks don't get forwards. You talk about the fact that we're not getting enough players in the area. Why can't Jamiti play to the left of that three and go, well, look, we're not expecting you to be a winger. We know that you're not quite comfortable as a forward, but we know you're a big lad, you're athletic, you can get in the box. Throw him in as your extra forward then. Mm. Then we wouldn't need to have a Decore constantly supporting the forwards. And you maybe then say to Mikhailenko, look, you're going to provide us with the width, or do it on the other side. It's just like, you know, we're average Joes in this sense. Yeah. And we've both done a bit of coaching, but we're nowhere near this level, but it's basic stuff, innit? Yeah. It's like
Inverted wingers is the other one. Why have inverted wingers if you're not going to build through your midfield?
No.
It just didn't make sense to me.
No.
He does it with Jack Harrison all the time.
Yeah.
He has to cut back inside to get a cross in, so he's delayed, let them set. You think, well,
and that's fine if your fullbacks are greater overlapping and I'm going to bring them into the game. But if you're cutting inside all the time and you're narrowing that angle for the cross, you've got no one coming in on the back post. Because if you are crossing from a narrow angle, and the whips on that side, you need back post runners to keep the ball in play. We don't have that. Mm. It begs belief, doesn't it? Like, what's the plan?
That's the point. And when he has cut in, and I've watched them loads lately, is when he does cut in, it's like no one knows what he's doing.
No.
So it's like, well, you obviously haven't done that in training. No. But if you have, you've at least got someone who's made a move for you on the inside, so you can cut in again and get a shot off or a cross. But for me, again, a bit of a reset to basics. You know, let's be hard to beat. You know, let's create in wide areas, crosses. And then I honestly think 2 up front, especially the home games, is probably the right way to go for us.
Well, I messaged you this, or I sent you the voice note before we come on. It was actually this morning, because, you know, like a lot of Evertonians, I was surprised to not even see Calvert-Lewin in the squad. Mm-hmm. There was a rumour last week, it was a vicious rumour, that he's got injured, he's out for the season. I don't think that's the case. Is he back for Saturday?
From what I hear, he's got a light strain.
Yeah.
But you just don't know with Calvert-Lewin, do you? Yeah, we heard this last time. But
it was months with that strain. So, I mean, look, that's massively concerning if he is out, but it does open the door for hopefully all of the potential options that we spoke about. And I can only hope that he can roll the dice in that sense, because I think if he doesn't and he tries to go into that game with a similar shape mentality to the Chelsea game, I think Forrest have got enough ability to beat us and beat us comfortably if we do. The other points are around like the general state of the club. There's some question marks around Dyche. We'll kind of get onto that whilst also addressing the continuing doubts over the finances of the club. Another surprise on Monday night was seeing Mascheri in the crowd, the first time we've seen him at an Everton game for quite some time. He was sitting next to Josh Wanda from 777 Partners and Kevin Thelwell. You know, you can read in between the lines, and almost obviously say that it was because of the urgency around the MSP loan, which was due for payments early hours on the Tuesday morning. It was quite a typical Everton one that apparently the deadline was 5 a.m. on Tuesday morning, which is brilliant. Like 5 a.m. deadline, but it's to do with the States, obviously MSP being based in the States. The suggestion, which is, I think, pretty much a fact, is that if he wouldn't have paid that loan on Tuesday, it was inevitable we were going to go into administration. Thankfully, there's been some resolution found in the short term, which, you know, delays the repayments of that loan. I'm going to, again, go out on a bit of a whim and, you know, just suggest on my side that the delay, I think, that's been agreed is let's delay it till after the season so that we don't get any more points deducted. And I think that the reason I say that is obviously we know that if the loan would have been recalled for repayments or whatever, there would have been an option there of them taking shares. They may have then inevitably went, well, we're putting the club into administration so we can try and get our money back. I think one of the arguments from Mascheri and the powers, whatever the powers that be are at this club at the moment, would have been, look, you're cutting your nose off to spite your face here. Because if you want your money back, the best chance of you getting your money back is this club being in the Premier League. You recall your loan now, it's going to cause the club to go into administration, lose more points, get relegated. Mm-hmm. You're not getting your money. And I think it's almost been a bit of a, okay, well, we've got to do that. Otherwise, you know, we're screwed.
To be honest with you, it's another theory, isn't it? Mm. Without any clarity.
No, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And that's the scary thing for me.
As much as I can say from it.
And I just think, you know, with the big thing that keeps jumping to mind with me is debt on top of debt. Mm. You know, where's that going to leave us with any prospective owners?
No.
You know, and the fact that 777 are still willing to put their hands in the pocket and cover loans and stuff like that.
I don't know whose pocket they're putting their hands in. Like, it's not theirs, but
well,
still.
Yeah, it's like borrowing money to pay someone off someone else. For me, that's the worrying bit. And I just think, you know, you could be blob on there with like delaying it so it doesn't affect us, but I'm pretty certain the Premier League I'd have something to say if that was the case and defaulting it like for next season. So if we did go
dock us next season, but yeah. I think that the argument, I guess, if you were going to try and say, look, don't do this to us because you know you're putting yourself in a weaker position to get your money back, the argument would be, look, if it happens at the start of next season, you know, we've shown we can deal with, you know, that level of points deduction at the start of the season. We couldn't do it at this end of the season. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. It just, for me, figures. And again, I was speaking to you, like saying, in a normal situation, if someone owed you money and you're coming back to get that money and you thought that by, I don't know, putting pressure on them or whatever, taking the house off them or whatever was going to mean you weren't going to get your money, you'd probably think, well, I'll just delay it then. If it means I'll get it next month, I'd rather get it next month than not get it at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a genuine concern from MSP. They don't want the equity. They don't want Mascheri's equity in the club because, you know, it's worthless.
Yeah. Well, is it? I mean, I think we're a new stadium coming and, you know,
a new stadium now that we've already borrowed against significantly.
Exactly. You know, so I think the only way for Mascheri to make it appealable to someone to come and get it now is pretty much write it off to a certain extent. Mm. You know, a lot of the debt in the sale, you know, when it sells, it basically clearing the debt that he's put on the club to make it more appealing. So I still feel between 777 and MSP, for them still to be around the situation, well, why would they be if they knew that they weren't something that would be worth taking on?
Yeah, even if it was selling it for scraps, they probably still feel they can make a profit off it.
Yeah, you know, the alarming capitals thing with that one as well is going into a stadium that doesn't even belong to us.
Well, you know, that's
in effect,
much
that's
the
what it is, you know, and that's worrying, you know. So for any future revenues, you know, that we want to generate, you know, as a club, you know, how's that going to affect?
We would be able to monetize it, but we'd be paying a lease on the stadium, much like we've been doing at Finch Farm for a while now. Mm. We sold that off as well. So I don't think that, like, West Ham do it at the moment, obviously with the London
stadium,
Metro
yeah.
Council or London Met, they pay a lease on that, and obviously they're still able to monetize it. In fact, the season tickets are really cheap there. But it's still not an ideal situation. Paying a lease on a stadium that you originally financed to build, or you planned to finance to build, and then would have created a, you know, a revenue without the cost, but with minimal cost, versus paying a lease. It's just not it's a grim situation to end up being in. I mean, just for the benefit of everyone else, I'm going to put the link to the Guardian article that me and Colin read through before. We couldn't go through all that, but it's probably the most up-to-date source that I've found so far, which kind of summarises the predicament that Everton are in, the situation they're in. Interesting, but not surprising that there's no comments from anyone. Nobody's commenting on it, which, read from that what you will, you can only be concerned about it, as you said. It goes on top of a long list of a lack of communication that we've had from the club on matters that are critical. So, as always, and it feels like it's the constant thing we have to say, watch this space. One last comment to add on the end of that, really, was from Guns, I don't know what your name is, but anyway, on X, the division amongst Deitch, the players, and the ownership is toxic. Worrying times for our club. Do you fear the worst if we don't stay up? I mean, I can't see how you wouldn't fear the worst if we don't stay up.
Yeah, I mean, the division one, again, because we're not that involved in the club on a day-by-day basis, you can surmise what you want, you know, from the outside. If you were winning, then you'd say together. Yeah, you know what I mean? So it's easy to pick that comment off.
No, it's true, that, because you would have said that back in whatever, November, when we picked up all of those wins.
Well, I still believe the uncertainty off the pitch, the Premier League, the ownership is now starting to have a detrimental effect on like what it looks like on the pitch with the players. I think they're probably worn out with it.
Yeah,
you know, to a certain extent. And I think Deitch, you know, the you know, he might, for all we know, he might be doing an unbelievable job that we're unaware of behind the scenes to keep it all together. And we won't know until the fallout if something goes catastrophically wrong to realise what he was actually doing. And that's why he's not communicating in a way that we're asking these questions.
Yeah,
but for me, the owner, the Premier League, there's a disjointed view on what's going on there between them two, which then causes a ripple effect of anxiety amongst fans and players. And I think that's what we're paying the price for now.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Let's, as I say, we'll hopefully have more news, have updates. There'll hopefully be comms to come out, but I'm not holding my breath at this moment in time. No more socials, Carl. We have got a opposition preview that we bring into you on Thursday. I think it's Thursday afternoon that I'm recording with the Notts Forest podcast. Apologies for not getting one at the Chelsea one for the Chelsea game. We did have some comments saying, why have you not done an opposition preview for the Chelsea one? Fact was, we just couldn't get times that worked, and that's the difficulty at times with opposition podcasts. We've got to find a time that works for them, a time that works for us. As anyone who's been following the podcast for as long as we've been doing it knows, we don't do it full time. It's not our job, unfortunately. So we've got to try and find that time between our own personal family lives and work, and we were not able to make it happen. But we have got a Forest preview, which will be a very juicy one, I'm sure, coming up on Thursday. But, Carl, I'm going to ask your opinion briefly on the game. Two questions, really. One, how would you like to see the team set up against Forest? Two, how do we get 3 points? I guess that's the same question.
Yeah. I think it depends on who's available, you know. But me personally, I think I've stuck to my guns on it, is be as tight as you can. Look, we're not going to come out and be an expansive team against Forest. And I think the fans need to understand that. I said that last game with Burnley, win ugly. You know, it won't mean no more than 3 points at the end of the day. We went ugly, and you can pick it out if you don't like the way, the style of footy, but them 3 points are huge. You know, you cannot get beat on Sunday. So even if it was backs to the walls and it was a draw, I'd still take a draw because it's picking points up.
Yeah.
And
would you be happy with a draw at the weekend?
If there's no Brandwaite and Calvert-Lewin, but if there is, then I'd expect, you know, at least to, again, it's going back to creating chances. If we can create them chances, then, you know, Forrest are just as susceptible as conceding goals at the back as what we are. But it's their attack. I think their attack is a lot stronger and a lot more
dynamic
and, you know, organised.
They've got variety, haven't they? They've got players who can come off the bench and change it.
I think he might actually set up differently on Sunday. I think he might go with three centre-backs.
I think even got three fit centre-backs.
Well, I think
just Godfrey, Keane and maybe Tarkowski.
Yeah, I think he might go over Coleman in there. I just think he might tighten up based on the result that we've just had. You know, I think he might look at it.
You've even got Mikhailenko, who can play to the left side of a three as well, haven't you?
Yeah.
And but, Forest play a back three as well, don't they?
They do, but I think that's where they benefit from more, you know, attacking players.
Well, then they've got Nico Williams, who's a very attacking fullback. They've got the Brazilian lads on the left side, but they've got a hell of a lot more attacking talent than we have.
But I just think if he's got everyone fit and ready, he's probably got a good chance of winning it. But it won't be nice. It'll be another Burnley performance for me. Limited plan. Or
I don't think Jared Branthwaite will be available, but I do think Calvert-Lewin will. I mean, I don't know what gives me faith of that, because if it's a strain he's left out the squad altogether, I get the feeling he'll be all right for Forest, or he'll at least. I think even more so on the basis that we struggled so much in the final third, I think he'll think, you know, it's worth taking the risk. Because if you think about it, back to your point, drawing the game, I don't personally think the draw is a bad result to the weekend, given the fact that they can't pick up points, obviously, as well. So it's
canceling,
can't afford to lose, can you? I think it's a, and again, I know a lot of people will be commenting the same. Do you mean you can't afford to lose a Forest? You've got to go and win the game. I'm not saying I don't want us to win the game or try and win the game, but it's more a not lose game than anything else. Because we lose against Forest and Luton managed to pick up points, there's a good chance we're in that relegation zone, and Forest have got a little bit of breathing momentum space there, because of momentum, bit of breathing space. They've got the goal difference back completely. Could be a swing then of four goals if they win by two. Mm-hmm. So it could be catastrophic. Yeah.
I mean, for me now, sit in, dig in, and take the limited amount of chances you get, and just, you know, try and convert, which is what we struggle with.
Who do we play then? Let's assume that Calvert-Lewin's fit.
Yeah.
Who do you put in those five positions? Because
he's going to pick similar 11 that he has done for weeks. It's going to be Pickford, Michalenko, if Brantwaite's fit, if not, it's Keane, Tarkowski. I think he'll go with Coleman.
He'll go for the experience, without doubt, yeah.
And I think he's going to go with Young on the right. Okay. Yeah, and I think he's going to probably look with Dukes or Decore as the attacking midfielder, and it'll be Garner, McNeil, and I think he'll go with Calvert-Lewin up front. Me personally, I'd like to have seen Jack. I'd like to see Jack Harrison on the right, and Gomez.
I thought Gomez was one of the very, very few bright points from the Burnley game and the Chelsea game. Now, look, we got 3 points in the Burnley game, and everyone's heard us say, "Look, I think it was a dreadful performance, but we got the 3 points." But I thought Gomez still played particularly well on the day, and he just looked the team, everyone. And you spoke about it briefly, and I've said it so many times as well. We don't look like we've got a clue. We don't look like we've got any composure, any idea on the ball. He's the exception. Everyone trusts him. You can see it when he's available. Even if someone's marking him, people will give him the ball because they know he'll look after it. They know he'll find someone else. They know he'll invariably find the right pass as well. Mm-hmm. Obviously, he's got his physical frailties and whatever, but if you can have two midfielders who'll do that running for him, I think he's invaluable. Yeah, I think he's got to play.
I think the other point to make as well is, which was quite alarming, was the player ratings of Chelsea the other night, and Pickford's too.
And
for me, I honestly think he's going with who he is and the experience, but any other keeper at any other team would probably have been bombed by now. And I think, you know, Virginia would probably be in now, you know, playing. But for his experience and everything else, he's going with him. I honestly think, at home especially, the amount of anxiety he causes with the daft things he does with the fans is just like, it gets to a point now where it's having a knock-on effect, you know, with the rest of the team, the short passes. You know, look, we're not going to play out, so just be direct. Mm. We all know what you're going to do then.
Yeah.
But it's the chances he takes, it's that the position he takes up when he wants to get on the ball, high up. He just looks like now he's got more mistakes in him, you know, week in, week out. Obviously, the Palmer pass the other night, but we've seen that for weeks. I've seen that for weeks, that anxiety he causes. He's just trying to play a different game.
Yeah.
You know, and that's maybe the lack of the plan, but, you know, we'll not stick.
Yeah, and I genuinely think, and look, nobody needs to, anyone who's followed this podcast long enough knows what I think of Jordan Pickford. Not that I don't like him, I just don't think he's for us. And again, I've been criticised for it. Got criticised extremely heavily last summer for saying that I thought we should sell him and reinvest the money in other areas of the pitch. I still believe that. But for me, he's just got this attitude about him, and I can imagine him being one of the players going like, the manager, do you know what I mean? We'll do this and I'll do that. And he puffs his chest out. I'm England number one. I'm this, I'm that. I'm better than this team. He's got that about him. Even the other night when he conceded that goal, it was like, he didn't seem like he was genuinely like, you know, devastated. It was just like, got that one wrong. Do you know what I mean?
I see it, guys. We sit in the paddock, I see it all the time, but it's the constant like screaming at people for no reason whatsoever.
You can
see the two centre backs like looking, thinking, what's he talking about? And that's the bit what I'm saying about causing anxiety amongst the people in front of him as well as on the outside. But for me, his performances have been pretty poor. I think his main attribute for like kicking significantly dipped.
I guess if you're gonna defend him slightly at that, there could be a suggestion that he's getting asked to do something with the ball that he maybe doesn't completely buy into, so it's against his nature. He's always been the diagonal one, hasn't he? That diagonal.
Yeah.
Because we play the inverted wingers, that diagonal doesn't really work, does it?
No.
He can get away with it at times, so the fullbacks, if Mikhailenko or Coleman or whoever pushed up a bit, you can see sometimes he almost approaches the ball in a bit of a weird way, doesn't he? And then he gets himself in a
Yeah, it's his
muddle.
Style of doing it. But I mean, if you focus on it a little bit, how many times does he kick the ball out of play?
Oh, I know, yeah.
He weren't doing that early doors. But I mean, I don't want to hang up on him too much, but for a goalie to get a rating of two,
yeah, that's,
you know, I know it does reflect, you know, the scoreline, but at England's number one keeper shouldn't be getting a rating of two, regardless of what's in front of him. For me, he should be doing a lot more. You can
impact on the game and make correct decisions at the right time, and he didn't do that enough. Yeah. I think it's a fair rating, because if the errors he made were made anywhere else on the pitch, then you know you'd be giving that player a player too as well. But
then last thing on that is his experience, isn't it? Don't play short if you know you're under pressure. You know, hold on to it, slow the game down, play into a channel more. You know, be a bit more direct with it, but. He just seems to me like he's lost a bit of focus, bit of a you know, doing the right thing in at the right time. For me, he's gambling a bit more.
No, I agree. I think that's about all we've got time for. Sorry, I was just seeing if Millsy had sent me any more stuff. He does that a lot. But look, I think there's been a lot we've covered in this episode. I think it's a massive game. I said it last week before the Burnley one. Bit of a cheesy rallying cry. It's a massive game of Goodison, another chance, whether we like it or not, for the fans to have their influence on the team, to get behind the team. I think what Colin said was spot on before. I don't think it's maybe going to be a game for the purists this weekend. I think it might be a game that we have to dig in, be tough to beat. Maybe we have a few chances. I thought the fans, despite how poor we were against Burnley, were fully behind the team, and we need that again this weekend. Massive weekend for the Blues. Again, big shout out to Leighton and Caden. Get your heads up this week, lads. Get behind the Blues. I'm sure we'll be getting 3 points this weekend. And thanks for following the channel. Thanks again, Colin, for coming in.
No problem, guys.
And as always, up the Toffees.